Booker Prize winner Anne Enright added to her honours in 2015 when she was made Ireland's first laureate for Irish fiction. Author of novels such as The Gathering and The Green Road, Anne Enright has now published a series of lectures she gave during her laureateship, and the book is called No Authority. And Anne Enright in with me in studio this evening. That title, No Authority, there's a wonderful story at the, or in your introduction, you kind of explain where this comes from, Anne, around just around the election of President Trump, November 2016, but there had been a family event previous to that which seeped into this.
Yeah, we've just come to publish the lectures. Each laureate, Sebastian Barna is the current laureate, and his lectures are will be published in their turn in this sequence of little collections. And in 2015, it's really hard to remember what all that was like back then, but it was pre-Trump and it was pre a lot of things becoming very evident and clear. And as I write in my introduction to the volume, it was also the end of my own wonderful father's life. So even as Trump was, you know, shaking his booty and getting up on the world stage, my father had entered his decline. And I was thinking about men, and I was thinking about authority, because whether I wanted to or not, I somehow seemed to be obliged into talking about gender, and Trump's rise was a great motivating factor in all that. Suddenly things became very unchanged and very clear and crystallised and wrong. And I wanted to talk about that sudden anger that people felt at that time, that the changes we thought we'd worked so hard towards seemed to dissolve into thin air. Now, whether they did or didn't is moot. But that moment of emotion was very interesting to me. And it coincided with the loss of a wonderful authority figure from my life. So when I was called up being the word, my elevation as laureate, I wondered how I would do that. How would I be an authority of any kind, a figure or a symbol of any kind?
And the example that you had, and if you don't mind my saying this, you write about it beautifully in the introduction, the nature of the authority that your father gave you as an example was a phenomenal type of authority, because it certainly wasn't authoritarian.
No, there was no bombast or posturing. There was no nonsense. It was just such a very gentle, clever, playful sort of man. And he just was a very good observer of his children, and he gave very little advice, and we always took it. I'm sure that my ideas about him were slightly idealised. And I wanted, because, I mean, people have come up to me since saying, thank you for that piece. I adored my father. These women who came up. And these women might be feminists, they might be cross, they might be all kinds of things about the state of the world today.
You can still like your father. You can still like any man.
I adored my father. Mm. So I was looking at masculinities and modes of authority. That's what I was looking at. But I was more thinking, I tried to get under the skin of the moment a little bit, and thinking about how it is that men manage or how we look up to men.
So what we get in the book, there are two short stories in the midst of it all, and there are a number of lectures that you give. And in your afterword to the book, actually, you point out that it interested you, if I read this correctly, it interested you to find out that you had actually written given three lectures about the female voice. That suggests to me you didn't set out with that in mind, but it came out that way.
As I said, it's really hard to remember back in 2015. Yeah. But in 2015, being a woman was a slightly less interesting state than being a writer. Mm. And you really wanted to be the writer and not the woman, because once you get into the goddamn ghetto of talking about gender, you will never be let out. Or that seemed to be the case. And actually, a lot of walls and a lot of ghettoisations faded and dissolved in the publishing world and in the world of opinion in those 4 years. It's really interesting.
You tell a great story in the third of the lectures, which is Call Yourself George, Gender Representation in the Irish Literary Landscape. A woman called Catherine Nichols and the experience she had when she submitted her book for publication.
This woman had no success with agents, so she decided to call herself George instead and sent out the book, which was suddenly an enormous success. And she found herself, or at least, you know, 8 times as successful as she had been statistically speaking.
1 in 25 responses to Catherine Nichols, 1 in 3 responses to George Nicholls?
So
same book.
Same book, same words, same full stop, same commas. So, yeah, I thought, well, if a man writes The Cat Sat on the Mat, clearly that is a very important and solemn statement. And if a woman writes The Cat Sat on the Mat, that is a domestic issue and not very interesting. And how this weight happens, how this weight inheres in exactly the same words. Very, very cross-making, really. You can't. She was jealous of her own male persona because he was more successful.
He's a much better writer than she was.
Yeah,
clearly.
Much better writer, clearly. You know,
You go through, and there are quite a lot of statistics in that. So they're best read rather than trying to go through them on radio. But basically, what you do look at is the number of reviews of books by women versus the number of reviews of books by men. And certainly at that time, it's so imbalanced.
It was wojous.
Yeah.
And it was quietly wojous. Nobody seemed to notice or care.
And even reviews by women.
The big disparity through all the statistics, and I went out fully armoured. I mean, I really, this piece was researched. Ken Keating is the researcher on the piece. He got all the statistics. It was really, I needed to do it properly, and I needed to do it without bitterness, if such a thing were possible. But the big disjunction was that women cheerfully read and reviewed books by men and said they were wonderful, and men did not read or review books by women, because to do so would expose them as what, you know? I don't know. And it would be wrong. It would be hard. It would be difficult. It would be a big ask. It would make them feel funny.
I think you actually give us, if, I don't know whether these are sentences or not, but they full stop, just full stop, can't full stop.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the problem with discussing or talking about noodling into these issues of masculinity is that you really wish that the guys would do it. You didn't have to do all the work, and you weren't in this kind of artificial gendered space where women are obliged to tell men how they feel and what their problem
is. So you would like to actually see a male writer taking up the card on this one and running with it?
Yeah, but I mean, things really have shifted.
Yeah.
And
Waking the Feminist was a big part of that.
Yeah, and Waking the Feminist was an inspiration to me and an obligation to me. And things really have shifted. What I couldn't understand was that I thought women's voices were about change and about the future. And why were we interested? Why were we not interested in that? Mm. I thought this is the most exciting work, is surely happening in the minds of young women now. But I felt I was slightly alone in that feeling. There's loads of exciting work for men as well. And and as not just as laureate, but as a human being, I don't really work that way myself.
Yeah, well, your final line, you're saying the legacy that you want as laureate, which people are always loath to talk about legacies and anything. But I think that final sentence you say there is something along the lines of, there's plenty of room. You know, it doesn't have to be an either or type of scenario.
Yeah, you want to undo Ireland's endless interest in hierarchies, which is a post-Catholic illness, really. Who's at the top? Seamus is at the top. Who's God? Who's the Holy Ghost?
Woman that you certainly give voice to, and who has given voice to a lot of young babies, let us be clear. Catherine Corliss is the subject of your first lecture, which is Antigone in Galway. What is the nature of the parallel you wanted to draw between the work that Catherine Corliss had done around the tune Babies, obviously, and the Greek play Antigone?
I had sort of written about Antigone before. Antigone is a woman who seeks the honourable burial of her brother's body. His body is cast out and dishonoured, and she buries him. She's a very strong figure, and one that informed The Gathering, for example, in one of my past books. I don't know how I was... Once I got drawn to Catherine Corliss's story, I thought it was really interesting. It was at that time, it was the cause of some international and national unease. It was before everyone got over themselves and said, oh, she's brilliant. So when I arrived in her kitchen, she was still a bit, I would say, wary of people quizzing her. She was still a bit thrown by the response to the clear facts that they were missing. There were children missing from the graveyards, and where were they? There were two facts that really drew me. One was that the word septic tank made everybody mad. And the other was that when the nuns left Tuam and the order left Tuam, they exhumed and brought with them the bodies of 12 of their sisters from the graveyard. And I thought, well, that is a very mad thing to do. And why and what act of conscience is being expiated by this amazing exhumation and transportation of bodies? What are, you know, where is the shame? It was a story full of resonant with shame.
I'm not sure how many times you spoke to Catherine Corris or whether it was just one visit, but you speak in the lecture about phone calls coming while you were there. I think it was two phone calls that came through from people seeking information, potentially about family members that they knew nothing about.
And she said that was a man who's 70 years old. He's had a family. He's five children. One of them is disabled, she says, and he feels that there must be some. I'd have to look at the words again, but that the problem of being a baby from Tuam has stayed with him. That there's some expiation or some difficulty there.
Yeah, it's incredibly upsetting to hear how that man felt about that.
He brought a bouquet of flowers to his mother's grave that she had supplied to him.
Yeah,
I was thinking, you know, about all of this, and when is it over? Because that's the question we keep asking ourselves, when is it over, when it is over? And the problem continues that the archives are closed. So it won't be over until people have the knowledge that they're looking for.
Yeah, I think the quote you give from the convent to one of the sisters is, we have nothing here for you now. You know?
Yeah.
Those are the lectures. There are other lectures in there as well. But there are two short stories which were written, I presume, during that year as well.
Yes.
And you make a statement again in one of the lectures, and I was, nobody wants to buy short stories, do they?
Well,
not?
Ireland's a bit funny because Ireland still likes the short story.
Do we buy them?
Not really, no.
We just like them.
Just like them, yeah, and like them in anthologies with other people. It's like chocolates in a box, you know. And that's what I love about short stories, that it's like chocolates in a box.
Yeah, you don't have to buy a whole box of coffee cream. You can get a few other things in there as well.
And I love them because of the variousness that they contain.
At the end of the year, then, I said that part of the legacy that you wanted to be remembered was this idea that there is room for everyone.
Oh, I don't want to be remembered at all.
give me a few more years
to be remembered.
But I was astonished that you even used the word legacy, because it is always, you know, we're always prodding. Interviewers often do that with older writers.
I took it all very seriously. I took it all as a kind of civic responsibility, which is interesting because my writerly instincts are to get the hell out of the country and ignore what's going on and just write a stupid book. And see how it goes, you know. But I was pulled back and I was stuck to it, and I feel it as a kind of knitting together of something for me personally now.
Well, given that you did take it so seriously and it was this sense of civic responsibility, what do you think that Laureate for Irish Fiction, what has it achieved through your... Sebastian Barry is the current Laureate. I'm not asking you what you achieved or what Sebastian should or could achieve, but the post itself, how important is it? What do you think is its relevance?
What it does is it brings a bit of respect to, official respect and decorum to the figure of the writer in Irish society.
And if I might go to one of the short stories just as we finish up, which is Solstice. It's a kind of, given that part of the beginnings of the period was around the death of your father, this is a lovely story around the death of a mother and a young... Do you remember it?
I do remember it, yeah. I hadn't written a story in about a decade. And it was the darkest day of the year, and the story starts, it was the year's turning. So I went into the house and I my kids were banging on about this and that, and I said, I'll pay you 10% if you let me steal your dialogue. I paid them 10%.
Their dialogue?
Some of it is, yeah.
Can you find a spot that...
There was this stuff about the Dakota pipeline. Now they're going to kill me for saying it on the radio.
Did you give them the 10%?
I did.
Well, then they have to accept that you've paid them their due rights.
Yeah,
you can quote them now.
Publicity free, I don't know. Anyway, so it's a thing you do with your life. You sort of turn it inside out and it flies off as fiction. But you have to have some little thing to start with. And so that is what I just decided I would start with, whatever they said.
And off you went from there.
Yeah.
So the new publication then is called No Authority. It features those two short stories. It has a number of lectures in there as well. An introduction.
It's a very beautiful thing by UCD Press. Yeah, it
looks quite beautiful.
It looks lovely.
Yeah, UCD, University College Dublin Press. Writings from the Laureateship, and then write No Authority. And we can expect something similar from Sebastian Barry, I suppose,
in 3 years' time.
In a few years' time. Yeah. And thanks for coming in to us this evening.
Thanks again, Sean. Thank you.